and welcome to the latest episode of Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and on the other line, as always, Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was covering the Brewers this weekend at American Family Field. Kind of a tough ending to the week against the Washington Nationals. The Brewers, overall, I guess you could call it a good week. They did go 4-2. Kind of a crazy walk-off win against Atlanta allows for this to be a winning week. And they take the first 2 of 3 against the Nationals. But the Sunday game, not good. And it's not just because of that 8-2 score with the big six-run inning. Nationals were able to put up a big number. But Freddy Peralta, starting pitcher, leaving the game with an injury. He, according to Craig Counsell, headed right to the injured list. And that is obviously a very bad sign. So Todd, he's had an injury like this before. He had it last year. So this isn't something that's necessarily, you know, you don't have to think worst case scenario right off the bat. But I'm curious what the mood was. You know, I know you talked to Freddie, you talked to Craig Counsell afterwards. But what are you thinking? What's sort of the feeling on where this goes from here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's concern, but still too early at this point to say, you know, how serious it's going to be. You mentioned that he's had something like this before and it wound up only shutting him down for a couple starts. And you hope at this point, that's what the same thing, what it is again. Sometimes guys have a tendency to try to throw through these things. And I think maybe Freddie is on the opposite end of that spectrum, which is a good thing. I think you always want to err on the side of caution with pitchers, and you're talking about shoulders, you're talking about elbows. So, you know, he's staying back from the start of this road trip, at least going to get some imaging done on Monday. And, we should know something more about it probably by the time Craig Counsell speaks to the media out in San Diego on Monday night. So I know everybody's got their collective fingers crossed and their breaths held and everything. So we won't really know much until we hear those results.
Yeah, our colleague Kurt Hoag is headed out to the road to San Diego when the Brewers open up a road trip out west. First West Coast action for the Brewers this year. First time in a while they faced a team that's really kind of at their level record-wise. You know, the Brewers are actually out. I didn't even realize this was in the offing. First 40 games of the season, that was through Saturday night. Their best start in franchise history, which, again, that wasn't even on my radar, but they're definitely playing good baseball going into this game Sunday. And Freddy Peralta, I really felt like, had turned a corner. He had a two-hitter, was a big part of a two-hitter early in the week. I believe that was Monday. And he was one of the guys coming out of the gate that looked a little bit wobbly. You know, maybe that shortened spring training that we talked about had something to do with it. But I feel like Todd, the pitching in general, throwing Brandon Woodruff in there had kind of turned a corner. And so I'm looking for signs that Freddie maybe was nursing some sort of injury or maybe hadn't quite been right. But recent results kind of said no. Did he say this wasn't something that's been building up over time, right? This was just something that he noticed today.
Yeah, it was just something that popped up today, and he tried pitching through it early in the game, and then when Chris Hook came out there in the fourth inning is when he mentioned it, and that's when they pulled the plug on him, obviously. So, you know, you take him at his word, and the way he had been pitching coming into Sunday, you obviously would believe that he was feeling good. So, again, we'll just kind of wait and see, and see what happens. You know, the Brewers are at least fortunate in the looking at the situation and that they've got Aaron Ashby that you know they don't have to dip into the minors necessarily for another starter or, you know, panic and make some sort of move. They've got a guy that's already stretched out, and this is part of the reason why they wanted him stretched out coming into the season. And you know, now it's just kind of plug and play, and the Brewers are going to go with five starters for the time being. And you know, again, from their perspective, they're hoping clearly that it's going to just be a short absence for Freddy Peralta, and you know, you can get him back without much time off and much effort trying to get him stretched back out again, and you kind of hit the ground running.
That was obviously going to be the next question, is what the rotation does from here. And like you mentioned, the Brewers are equipped to absorb something like this, especially short term. They can go with the five other starters that they have on their regular rotation. We already knew Ashby was going to be pitching here early on this road trip, but there is a doubleheader coming up a week from Monday at Chicago. It's a three-city road trip that goes from San Diego to St. Louis and to the Cubs. So they will need a spot starter, if nothing else, if Peralta isn't healthy, which I don't think even if he's good in 10 days, he'd be back by then. So they'll need somebody. The obvious name that is going to jump out at people is Ethan Small down at Nashville, one of their top prospects who's been performing very well. You know, I wonder if they would rather bring him up as a reliever, as they've done with pretty much all these guys in the rotation at some point before kind of putting them in the rotation, if they would rather let him get his feet wet that way and maybe go with like a Josh Lindblom, or just do a Johnny Holstaff thing for a game. The Brewers have certainly worked that angle before as well. So I don't know. I don't know if you think there's any changes coming or necessary, but I mean, I think if I'm reading this right, what you're saying is it's just going to be the same five guys, and then they'll address that spot start and really just see what's up with Freddie before making any other, you know, longer term decisions.
The way I read Craig Counsell today after the game, that's I think that's make do with what you got right now, and then you know, when you need that extra guy, then you kind of re-examine. But you know, in probably a little bit less than another week, we'll have a better understanding and a better idea as the Brewers head into that doubleheader next Monday in Chicago.
Elsewhere on the injury front, Willy Adames went officially on the injured list. It sounds like from what you gleaned from talking to him that he'd like to be back after that minimum 10 days, and if it's not that, it'll be maybe hopefully shortly thereafter. His one of the guys that's been getting some extra playing time in the field, Mike Brasso. It's been an adventure for him defensively, to say the least. And he's not alone. A lot of Brewers have struggled defensively. We've touched on that from time to time. They're actually doing pretty well on this homestand until the last couple games. There were some crazy stuff going on Sunday. Some bunts and just a lot of shakiness on the infield. And Brasso, we could, I guess, talk about him a little bit. But in terms of if that defense is going to cost him a spot on this roster eventually, you know, since he is kind of that utility guy. But for now, just Willy Adames' situation, do you imagine that it is going to be the 10 days like it sounds? And, you know, do you think, I assume then you just put Luis Arias back at third base, and it's not going to be, it's going to be a situation where he comes back and is able to play every day, or maybe they ease him back in. I don't know what you think comes next for him.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, obviously a lot's going to depend on when he runs the bases, which he told me it was going to be Tuesday in San Diego. That's usually the big kind of the final hurdle that guys with lower body injuries, injuries have to get over in order to prove that you know, they're ready to come back. You know, high ankle sprains are a little bit trickier. Just from what I understand and what I, you know, have seen in the past, not only in you know, baseball, but basketball and football as well. Typically they're a little bit more involved and take a little bit more time to heal correctly. So, you know, certainly the Brewers are not going to rush him back at this point. It's not worth it in the short term. And, you know, part of that may just be you know, Willie hoping and being positive. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with having a goal in mind. So it's just going to be another one of those kind of wait and see type things. And certainly the Brewers would welcome him back with open arms if they're confident that he's ready to go. But the next few days, I think will tell. You know, it's definitely a good sign that he's going on the road with the team. So, you know, even if it's not that first day in St. Louis, it's possible that it could be later in that series, or, you know, maybe that the game we were just or the day we were just talking about before, the doubleheader in Chicago. Either way, it'll be good to get him back whenever he is able to return.
One of the another guy who's on this roster, partially because of some injuries, Keston Hira had a crazy day against the Atlanta Braves. I mentioned that walk-off win Wednesday, where Hira had been called back up to the team and was able to deliver the game-winning two-run homer in extra innings in the 11th. A lot of back and forth going on there. Colton Wong with a game-tying triple, I believe. It's the down to their last out, down to their last strike, and then Hira gets the big blow. I kind of small sample with Hira, I feel like we're seeing some better at bats from him, and he is, you know, his WRC plus is up quite a bit if you were into those sorts of stats. I mean, he is contributing. And so, you know, my thought process was he was kind of right now the last guy on the bench among the position players. Like if they need to, when Adames comes back, here is the natural next guy to go back down. But, you know, I mentioned Brasso too. I don't know if that's true. I don't know what. You know, I still don't really know what's in the Brewers' heads about where they think Keston Hira can go from here. I don't know what their expectations are at this point, I guess. So what do you think about Keston Hira? That was just one swing of the bat, but it was a good one, and I do feel like maybe we've seen a little bit of progress from him.
Yeah, definitely. And he, as we've seen, he's still possesses the kind of bat that can change a game with one swing. You know, that was a huge home run, obviously, and brought the Brewers all the way back in a game that certainly didn't look like they were going to win against the Braves. The thing that obviously hurts Keston here is he just does not have that positional versatility. So you're very limited in where you can play him. You can put him in DH spot once in a while. You can play him at first base. You can play him at second base. That's pretty much it. You know, if you could take Mike Brasso's versatility and put that into Keston Hira, then whoa, now you're talking about a player. But you know, the Brewers are kind of caught in a between a rock and a hard place with Keston Hira because you certainly like to have that bat around for that quick strike potential, but at the same time, you know, if he's languishing on the bench and getting a pinch hit opportunity every couple of games, or you know, making a start every 3 or 4 days, you know, it's not very realistic to expect him to, you know, continue to stay sharp. So he was able to go down to Nashville, get regular playing time, regular at bats, and he was crushing it in the little sample size that you know, he had down there before he got recalled. So yeah, it's just it's there's no easy answers there. From a, you know, from the perspective of kind of on the outside looking in, you certainly root for like Keston here, all that he's been through and the struggles. Really cool to see him, you know, come back last week and hit that home run and win the game. But you know, there's still a lot more to prove with him and a lot more that needs to be done in order for him to, you know, really kind of cement a spot on the roster and not, you know, be subject to that up and down that's so tough on guys.
Brewers lost one of their relief pitching options with JC Mejia getting an 80-game suspension for PED use. It's the second, or a banned substance, I should say. He's the second guy, Pedro Severino, who was on track to be the Brewers' number two catcher coming into the year, hasn't played a game this season because of a similar suspension. It's gotten Victor Caratini on this roster. I'd be curious to know what happens when 80 games are up and Pedro Severino comes back. I'd love to know what the Brewers are thinking there. We're halfway through that, and I'm not sure what the obvious answer is there, but what do you think happens when Pedro Severino comes back? Do you have any idea yet, or is it just, I mean, it's pretty early to try to make that assumption, but what would the Brewers do then?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really an interesting kind of conundrum that they're in. I actually was thinking about that the other day, and you know, could you carry three catchers the rest of the way? I guess it's possible. You're going to cut down on your versatility. You know, Caratini can play some first base. He can play some third base in a pinch, and you like the fact that he's a switch hitter. You know, so maybe you can get away with that. I would think that the Brewers, I'm not quite sure what the rules are, but I'm guessing the Brewers would be allowed some time for once the 80 games is up that they could send Severino to the minors on a rehab assignment. I don't know how long they could stretch that out, but you know, he certainly would be entitled to some time to kind of get back up to speed because you know, certainly going half a season without seeing any start, any live pitching or anything like that. You know, he's gonna need some time for that. So, yeah, it's just kind of a weird deal. Two guys get popped for 80 games apiece. Two guys who weren't necessarily expected to be huge contributors, but guys that the Brewers went out and acquired in the off season, thinking that they were going to be you know, parts of this team, and now they're having to make do without both of them. And as the Brewers have done in the past, they've, you know, they shift gears and they keep right on trucking, and that's what they're doing so far. You know, Caratini hasn't been tearing the cover off the ball, but I would say he's done a pretty good job overall, considering how fast he had to acclimate to this new team. And learning the pitching staff and learning his teammates and everything. So I think the Brewers are getting everything and more that they've expected out of Caratini. And as far as Mejia goes, it was such a small sample, did not pitch well in that small sample size. So it's kind of like, move on, turn the page, and maybe toward the end of the season, or probably more likely next season, you might be able to look to him as possibly becoming a contributor again.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Okay, so Sunday was the first bobblehead day of the year. Before I get to three up, three down, I'll throw you this curveball, the Willie Adames bobblehead, the Claus Up bobblehead. And you'd written about his we're really right on the year anniversary of the Brewers trading for him, and you wrote about that at jsonline.com. The Rays have gotten a lot out of that deal as well, but that was a huge moment for the Brewers to add the shortstop when they did, and it really boosted their run to the playoffs last year and has continued to be providing pretty good dividends. Okay, so I don't know if you are a bobblehead guy. I don't think you are, but I'm looking at my little collection here of Brewers bobbleheads that I have, and I'm wondering, Todd, do you have any favorites? Are there particular bobbleheads that you think are really the most memorable of the collection?
Well, first of all, I will correct you. I'll give Kurt was the one who wrote the story about Willie, but
Oh,
certainly
yes.
I've written my fair share about him as well. And it's funny you mentioned the bobblehead stuff. So I do these podcasts from my basement, and I literally have hundreds of bobbleheads that I'm looking at right now. So I have
You are a
every
bobblehead
single
guy.
bobblehead given out by the Brewers since I got on the beat in 2011. Plus, then you have various Marquette ones, Bucks ones. Then you also have the bobbleheads that I've been able to pick up over the course of my years covering the team on the road. A lot of times teams will give them away on Sundays and they'll give them to the media. But to add to my collection, which is pretty neat, is when my compatriot Tom Haudricourt moved to Virginia. Before he moved, I basically had a shopping spree at his house and was able to pretty much take whatever I wanted. And among
Nice.
the boxes and boxes of things that I was able to procure from Tom was two very large boxes of bobbleheads that he's collected. But the couple that I really like are there's a Marlins one with what's the Marlin guy's name?
The Marlins man
The
or Billy the
mascot.
Marlin?
Billy the Marlin. Yeah, so there's a big Billy the Marlin one in here. There is a Ricky Vaughn Wild Thing one in here.
Nice.
I have a signed Dim Tillard one in here. Let's see what else. There's just a ton of actually, all right, sorry. I just found going through here. It's so funny that you asked me this question. The best one of all. And I'm pretty sure Tom got this one several years ago when the Brewers played the exhibition games in Montreal.
Yeah.
Youppi.
Nice,
Yeah.
Yuppie.
Yeah. So I have a Youppi here as well. So at some point, maybe this coming off season, when I have some time to do it, I have to start messing around in my basement here and creating some more space to put these all up along with my WWE wrestling figures. And I have a, oh, Tommy also got me a couple years ago when he was in Washington, Anthony Fauci first pitch bobble
Yes, all
head.
right.
So I've got a Cato Kaelin signed bobblehead he gave me personally. This isn't a bobblehead, but I have a Michael Myers Halloween action figure down here too. So
Okay.
I've got yeah, all kinds of neat stuff in my basement.
Cool. From my perspective, I really like the collection the Brewers put out last year that was intended for their 50th anniversary, and it ended up, being delayed by COVID, so 2021. I didn't like the idea that they were all going to be giving away players that have all been represented as bobbleheads before. There's multiple Paul Molitors and Robin Yount and Hank Aarons, as you'd expect there would be. So I wasn't crazy about that. Every single player that was represented had already been presented as a bobblehead at some point. There was, I think, a Lo Kane and a Christian Yelich. But I really liked the ones that they put out last year. They're really, really slick. And As I'm looking at my collection, I think those are kind of some of the more prominent ones. I really liked it when they did sort of the moments. CC Sabathia celebrating that last game of the 2008 season. Ryan Braun celebrating one of his home runs. I believe that was the 2011 title clinching NL Central title clinching win over the Marlins. Like, I really like those. Robin Yount on his motorbike, on his motorcycle. I'm a big fan of those. The ones that kind of represent a singular moment in time, and the Brewers
I
do a
have
good
one,
job.
not to cut you off, but one that I always thought was pretty unique and pretty cool from back in the day. The player certainly, didn't leave a huge mark on the franchise, but the Johnny VR one with the spinning dials for the stolen bases on the base of it, that one was cool.
Yeah, I like that one as well. Travis Shaw standing at the podium as the mayor of DDC. When they mess around with it, it is pretty fun. I get there's a big suite of current players this year, which is good because now we've gone a couple years without current players represented as bobbleheads for COVID or for anniversary or whatever else. So it makes sense that they're gonna do that. I'm still really really gonna advocate wherever I can that Teddy Higuera get represented at some point. Maybe Mike Caldwell too, while we're at it, but especially Teddy Higuera, who's never been the subject of an all-fan bobblehead giveaway. He is, maybe Josh Hader has a case here, but in my mind, still the best pitcher in Brewers history and needs to be represented as such. So hopefully next year we can see that happen. All right, Todd, let's get to our weekly features. We're going to start with three up, three down. The little moments from the week, things that stood out. I will get us started. Oh man, where do I want to start? One of the things that I thought was so great about Devin Williams this week was Monday against the Braves. He registers all the strikeouts that he registers in that inning, and there are three of them, all fastballs. So he's still mixed in changeups, which is of course his main course. But used the fastball to get the punch outs, and then he comes in Wednesday against the Braves and has a key inning. And he's getting three strikeouts again, but it's all changeups this time. He's getting his out pitches back, and he's throwing changeups. So it seemed to me that Devin Williams has fought his command a little bit this year, particularly with the changeup. If guys are able to lay off of it, it isn't always in the strike zone. But I think we're seeing him kind of figure out how to use his fastball a little more effectively when that's the case. So I just love that it was two different versions of Devin Williams against the same team. I don't know how you're supposed to hit the changeup if the fastball is also going to be that effective. Just a nice 1-2 punch from Devin Williams to help the Brewers pick up a couple wins against the Braves.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that kind of jumped out to me, and I talked to him about it this morning when I was in the clubhouse before the game, was Jace Peterson and his encounter with the fan who jumped onto the field at the end of the Braves game there in the ninth inning. And I walked up to him. I said, "It looked like you wanted to punch the guy." And he goes, "Honestly," he goes, "I was so locked in because remember, I'm trying to have an at bat against Kenley Jansen, and then this guy comes running up, and you don't know what he's going to do." But then, I figured pretty quick he just wanted a high five, but I wasn't going to do that because then you encourage other fans to potentially do it. But as we all, well, those of us who were at the game saw, he got hauled off pretty quickly at that point because the guy stopped running around. But then, credit to Jace Peterson to be able to step back in the box, off walk, which eventually scored the tying run and sent the game into extra innings. So, nod to Jace Peterson for being able to collect himself after what was a ridiculous moment in the game, and these idiots running onto the field. Thankfully, it doesn't happen that often anymore. But to be able to gather himself, get on base, score that run, and then the Brewers eventually go on to win that game on Keston Hiura's homer.
Yeah, totally broke up them. I mean, you could argue the guy jumping on the field somehow shifted gears. If you believe in metaphorical turning points, the Brewers were able to cobble it together there and win the game. That was wild. There's a video clip of Kenley Jansen just standing there on the mound and looking at something, and you don't know what it is, and you're like, "What is he looking at?" All of a sudden, a dude that looks shirtless—he did have a shirt on, but he looked shirtless—just runs by. It runs into the frame and out. It's like, "What? Wait, what? What was that?" That was incredible. So yes, that was a very weird. There's so so much we could take from that Wednesday game. Obviously, Keston Hiura's home run is the big one. Colton Wong's triple. Hunter Renfroe had an amazing catch in that game as well. I think my second one here is just Renfroe's outfield defense in general. Now, he did misjudge a fly ball on Sunday. That was pretty costly, although I'm not sure the Brewers win that game in any scenario. He also is credited on Friday with the start of a play that took away what would have been an inside the park home run. You know, Renfroe runs down a ball that Tyrone Taylor wasn't able to reel in on the warning track in center field, took a crazy carom. Renfroe to Colton Wong to Omar Narvaez at the plate. They get the out at the plate. An incredible, just a really exciting moment if you're there, because you kind of, the anticipation is building. You see the throw coming in. You know, inside the park home runs are pretty cool, and to cut one down from happening there is pretty special. So again, we've seen a lot out of Hunter Renfroe's defense, and it was on display there as well.
Yeah. Another one I would say, and again, I don't want to say I rubbed off on this guy at all, but I talked to him before Wednesday's game, the big comeback, as we've been talking about, Tyrone Taylor. And I asked him about, you know, is he a little bit disappointed with how he's played so far? Because really the playing in center field is, there's playing time there to be earned and to be taken with the slow start that Lorenzo Cain has gotten off to. And he admitted he'd been pressing a little bit and probably trying a little bit too hard, you know, to outright win that job, or at least, you know, get the bulk of the playing time there. But over the course of this this just completed homestand, he did lead the Brewers in RBIs and hit a couple of home runs. You know, the season average still wasn't great, but he hit 263 on this homestand, and he's got the kind of pop, and we saw last year, you know, the potential to really be a game changer at times. So you know, to see him starting to come around, and if he can do that a little bit more consistently and give the Brewers a little bit more punch in that bottom third of the order, I think that's a huge thing. And Lorenzo Cain, obviously, he does not have many peers in center field as far as defense goes, but Tyrone Taylor's no slouch out there either, and I think we all know that his throwing arm is better than Lorenzo Cain's as well. So, you know, if Tyrone Taylor can continue his solid play and play out there more consistently and give the Brewers more you know, more contribution, we'll be better off as a team.
Yeah, Lorenzo Cain, we haven't talked about him on this episode, but we have talked about him in the past, and it's been a struggle, and I do think you're going to see more and more playing time for Tyrone Taylor, presuming that he's able to keep up what he's done. You know, he had a diving catch on Tuesday as well, 3-run homer on Friday. Like things, like you said, things are looking up for him right now, so there is, in fact, playing time to be had. Lorenzo Cain really, really struggling at the start of the season here. So my third and final one, we'll go with Saturday night. Andrew McCutchen, leadoff home run on the first pitch of the game. That is the second time this year that he has led off first pitch of the game. Last time was, I believe, it was in Pittsburgh, so it was like literally the first pitch of the game. This was the first pitch to a Brewers batter of the game in the bottom of the first, but last time that happened, 2014, Carlos Gomez twice led off games with a first pitch home run. Paul Molitor has done it a couple times in his career as well. I don't know if I know Tommy Harper back in 1970 did it three times with a first pitch of the game home run, three different games. I think Molitor did that at some point too, or Don Money may have. So it's been done before. So if Andrew McCutchen were to do it a third time, he wouldn't be a first, but always fun when the very first pitch of the game is deposited for a run. Andrew McCutchen back in the lineup after COVID and swinging for the fences right out the gate. You love to see it.
Yeah. My final one. I think we all would agree that Corbin Burnes is the best pitcher on the Brewers staff overall. Clear, you know, best starting pitcher, definitely reigning Cy Young. It doesn't get much better than that. But, you know, when you look at what he's done to this point, what he's contributed, I just don't think enough has been said or written about Eric Lauer and the way he's performed this season. The numbers across the board, when you compare them to Corbin Burnes, are almost identical. They're better in some regards. Obviously, Eric Lauer's gotten better run support than Corbin Burnes, which has played a big factor in his 4-1 record compared to Corbin Burnes. But, you know, Corbin Burnes' ERA 2.26, Eric Lauer 2.16. Burnes has one more start, 8-7. Burnes has pitched 10 more innings than Lauer. eight more strikeouts than Lauer. Their whips are almost identical, 0.083 for Burns, 0.094 for Eric Lauer. They're both limiting opposing hitters to about a 200 average. It's just been remarkable what Eric Lauer has been able to do. And again, we keep pointing back to that trade that many Brewer fans were upset about, thinking that David Stearns got the short end of the stick with the San Diego Padres. And you look at it now, and Luis Arias is projecting as an everyday third baseman moving forward for the Brewers. Eric Lauer, a top of the rotation starting pitcher who's a lefty to boot, even better. And the Padres, obviously, they flipped Zach Davies. They got Yu Darvish as part of that deal, which is pretty good. But Trent Grisham, aside from that 2-month Gold Glove that he won in 2020, has not fared very well. So again, hat tip to Eric Lauer. The guy's been amazing. He's a blast to talk to because he's just very different. He's very open, very honest, and he's got a very different way of looking at things. He's almost California in that regard, but he's from Ohio. So, kind of funny when you talk to him and you think about that. But just been a lot of fun watching him pitch, and expect more of that to continue.
Yeah, Eric Lauer having possibly the biggest jump of any pitcher in the National League from last year to this year. And he was already pretty decent last year, but even if you look at the advanced stats, very promising, new velocity. Like the guy might be fully legit. We've talked about him before, and probably, like you said, should talk about him a lot more. All right, that's three up, three down. Let's move into Remember When. All right, this week I'm looking at triple plays because one was turned against the Milwaukee Brewers in that National Series. That was on Friday night. Of course, that's not as fun as looking at the plays that the Brewers themselves have turned. But Todd, I'm going to ask you real quick if you know this. In 2009, I was just looking at some tidbits, triple plays that happened. In 2009, the Brewers turned a triple play. It was a September 6th, 2009 game. Nobody remembers a triple play because something else happened in that game that caught everybody's attention and continues to be the thing everyone remembers. So do you know September 6th, 2009? Does that ring a bell at all?
No recollection. All I know is I've covered two games in 11 plus years where the Brewers turned triple plays, but I have no recollection of that one.
Got it. All right. So that's against the Giants in 2009. It ends with Prince Fielder's walk-off home run, the bomb celebration at home plate. That got everybody angry. The San Francisco Giants were very upset. They threw at him the subsequent spring training. Barry Zito hits Prince Fielder with a pitch, which is so stupid in spring training. But it totally obscured the fact that they turned a triple play in that game. Braden Looper on the hill got Aaron Rowan to just hit one to, Casey McGee at third base. So he went around the horn, just like this triple play that the Nationals turned, an around the horn triple play. Kind of boring, if we're being honest. They're not very exotic, but pretty simple stuff. And that was one of the funny little tidbits that I found. The one that I remember and really enjoyed was August 20 of 11 against the Dodgers, where the Brewers got the final out at the plate. I believe it was Matt Kemp. It was a Josh Wilson to Unieski Betancourt. Oh, okay, so you remember that one. Prince Fielder to George Kitaris. That was kind of a zany one. I did
No,
not.
actually, what was the relay again?
It was Josh Wilson to Uni Betancourt to Prince to George Kitaris at the plate.
Because I remember Prince's throw home was a little bit wide, and
Yes.
I think replay at the time that might have overturned it, but he was the Kemp argued vehemently from what I remember, and he looked like he may have gotten in there, but it was just a crazy finish there, and the way the relay unfolded and everything, it was pretty remarkable. So that was cool to see in person.
Couple more that I did not remember, that in the final home opener at County Stadium, or so they thought would be the final home opener in 1999, was a triple play. That was I think I vaguely remember it. I just didn't remember that it was so early in the season. That's a Cirillo to Vigna to Berry for the 90s Brewers fans out there. The Brewers turned two of them in 2016. One was the Holy Trinity of Aaron Hill to Yadiel Rivera to Chris Carter. And there was another one later where Chris Carter actually like speared a line drive off off of Votto's bat, steps on first. Chris Carter, no one is thinking, no one even remembers Chris Carter, to be quite honest, even though the guy hit 40 bombs. But steps on first, then throws over to get another guy off the bag. So he had initiated a triple play. Zach Davies on the mound for both of those triple plays. Chris Carter involved in four career triple plays, two with the Brewers. Yeah, like who would have known? But then my favorite is from one in 1971. It was against the Red Sox, and the three guys who got out were Billy Conigliaro, Don Pavlotich, and George Scott. And all three of those guys are traded to the Brewers after that season, after the 1971 season, in a pretty big blockbuster deal. George Scott was kind of the centerpiece of that deal. Speaking of which, I'm looking at his bobblehead right now to bring it full circle and all of the gold gloves that are stacked up. But Scott didn't break for home right away, so it was kind of a weird play. Also an out at the plate to cap off the triple play. I just thought it was kind of interesting that those three guys all ended up in the Brewers organization just 1 year later. So triple plays, they're rare, but not that rare. I think there have been 10 of them in Brewers history. Kind of fun, and that is this week's Remember When. All right, Todd, let's wrap it up with your with Todd's take of the week.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off home.
Let's see. My take of the week is I have to go to St. Louis for four games: Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And let's just be honest, of all the road trips that we take every season, not counting Chicago, because obviously you can jump in a car and drive to Chicago, but St. Louis is always the one that I least look forward to.
Really? That surprises me.
Yeah, it's kind of and I don't mean to offend anybody if you have St. Louis ties or whatever, but the ballpark I'm not crazy about. The press box is so high. You feel like you're not even at the game. It's so high and you're so far removed from things. And getting down to the clubhouse is an adventure. You need a map when you first get there until you really learn the lay of the land there. It's very convoluted, very long walk. Just the weird setup. I'm just not crazy about it at all. The only thing it has going for it is it's the one city in the NL Central that we can get a nonstop flight from Milwaukee to. So I will give thumbs up for that. But that it is not my favorite trip, and four games makes it even worse. But you can always count on the baseball being good at the very least, and the fans there are very knowledgeable. So in that regard, you know, they take their games, their baseball games seriously down there, and it's kind of cool to watch. You know, watch games from that perspective. But otherwise, you can have St. Louis.
Nice. Todd Rosiak calling out the city of St. Louis. I believe I heard you say your baseball team sucks, your stadium sucks. That's all I heard. That's all I heard, Todd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, tweet that out too, please.
Yes, I will. Out of context, that sounds good. So the Brewers will be headed, as Todd mentioned, four games in St. Louis, then four games in Wrigley Field, including a doubleheader that's following up this stop in San Diego. Busy week, a lot of late night baseball, though not super late, 8:40 p.m. We can handle that, I think. And then some stops in the NL Central. Todd, thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Microbrew. We will catch you again next week.
JR, it's always a pleasure.
It is indeed. Thank you for listening, everybody. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating review. I'm at JR Radcliffe on Twitter. He is at Todd_Rosiak. Let us know what you think, and we will chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.